U.S. hiring rebounded in June and topped all estimates of economists, signaling fears of a recession may be overplayed. However, despite this month's strong payrolls and the U.S. experiencing the longest economic expansion in post-war history, the labor market isn't that healthy. That's according to Barry Ritholtz, co-founder of Ritholtz Wealth Management and a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. He's here to tell us why. So the U.S. is very close to full employment, but you think that there's something sort of amiss?
That's correct. When we look at the data that usually accompanies full employment, you see a very high level of quits rate, meaning people leaving one job to take another. Of course, we see wages going way up, and along with that, rising consumer confidence, rising household formation, big durable good purchases, homes, cars, etc. The population to employment ratio is very high. There's just a run of about a dozen stats. Most of these stats are nowhere near the high end of the range. They're all pretty middle of the road. And so when the data says, hey, this doesn't look like full employment to us, forget 3.6%, where's the wage gains? Where's the voluntary quits? Where's the overtime hours and extended work week? None of the usual indicia of full employment is there, so I set out to see what I could find about it.
What did you find out?
So I had a conversation with Danny Blanchflower. He's the former member of the Bank of England Monetary Policy Committee. He's been an economics professor at Dartmouth for 30 years. He wrote a new book called Not Working, and it's all about the rise of underemployment both here in the United States and in the UK and Europe. And he found that there's a number of different factors, both economic and societal, that suggest that things are not really great in the labor market.
He talks about a lot of different measures, including a lot of people working part-time who actually want full-time work, and also disability filings increasing. Explain his premise.
Sure. So first, when we talk about the technical term is part-time for economic reasons, these are people who may be working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, but they're part-time because they have three or four separate part-time gigs. They're working at a Starbucks 20 hours a week. They're driving an Uber 15, 20 hours a week. The problem is that when you have a whole lot of part-time work, what you don't have is health care and retirement planning and all the usual benefits that go with a full-time job. So a lot of work, a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress. In fact, Blanchflower cites a study done by other researchers that when we poll people around the world and ask them, how much pain are you in? How much physical pain are you suffering? Americans are twice as likely to say they're in pain as just about any other country in the world.
The gig economy was supposed to make things better. You're supposed to be independent and not have to worry as much.
You know, the gig economy is great for consumers. I could take my phone and walk out in the street and get a delightful, air-conditioned, clean car to go wherever I want for a pretty reasonable price. Or I could go on vacation and stay in an Airbnb where you're staying at someone's house for half the price of a hotel. The problem is the gig economy turns out not to work that well for employees. We know that Uber drivers and Lyft drivers, they're stressed, they're working a lot of hours, they're not making a lot of money. It got to the point in New York City where the New York City Council passed a law that said this is the minimum wage. It's about $16 an hour for Uber drivers. I don't know if that's going to catch on in the rest of the country, but it's pretty clear that the gig economy is not going to be the salvation of the average unskilled worker. Now, if you have a background, an educational background, and a skill set in anything in the STEM sector, from computer programming to coding to website design, you could be an independent consultant. The gig economy works great for you. That's a six-figure or multi-six-figure job. But if you have a lower educational attainment level, if you're in parts of the country geographically that isn't doing especially well, look at how strong the coasts are, how strong the big urban centers are, and the industrial Midwest, where there is a technology component, like Minneapolis, like Chicago, like St. Louis, even places like Milwaukee are doing really, really well. Huge swaths of the country are not doing well, and if you're in an industry that has left the country, I got bad news for the folks in West Virginia. Coal isn't coming back. You better figure out and get yourself trained for a new sector. In fact, in the United States, last year, solar-related jobs passed coal jobs. The government should really be retraining these people in dying industries for the new, modern, technologically-based jobs of the future. And certainly solar and alternative energy is one of them.
Are jobs available in STEM, or do you have to be an independent contractor type?
So not only are jobs available in STEM sectors, it's one of the biggest areas of opportunities and job openings. STEM, we're constantly looking for the HB1 visas to bring in people from overseas. Look at China, look at India, look at Taiwan, look at South Korea. They spend a whole lot more time training their students in mathematics and advanced mathematics, engineering, programming. Go down the list of these jobs. Half of the C-suite in Silicon Valley are immigrants who've come from very often these countries. They do a fantastic job making this part of the core curriculum and not a discretionary choice at college level.
Thanks, Barry. That's Barry Ritholtz, co-founder of Ritholtz Wealth Management and a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion.